I wanted to have you share the story of how you got into wine, because it all started on the playground.
Yeah, isn't that a great place to start your wine career? Yes, it's true. I was a preschool teacher right out of college, and I chose to move to San Francisco, beautiful city, but very, very expensive. And a couple years into my teaching gig, I decided that if I wanted to stay in my beautiful San Francisco, I had to find a different line of work because I couldn't afford to support myself on a teacher's salary, unfortunately. So I started thinking about this, and one day I happened to have a conversation on the playground with the mother of one of the little boys in my class, and it was a true epiphany. She told me that I asked her what she did for a living, and she said she sold wine, and it was like bells and whistles went off in my head, and I was like, whoa, that's an actual job. It had never occurred to me. I always loved drinking wine, but I didn't grow up in a wine drinking family, so it was not anything that I knew anything about. I think I'm like a lot of Americans where, you know, when I could afford it, I enjoyed it, but I definitely always felt like it was a little elusive, a little sophisticated, and I was a little intimidated by it. And so when she said she did this, I sort of just made up my mind right there that day and said, okay, I'm gonna take on this challenge. This sounds really interesting. She told me how she got to travel the world learning about wine, and it sounded really glamorous. And so I started cold calling distributors that day, and pretty much everybody either hung up on me or didn't call me back. I was 23. I didn't know anything about wine or sales, but I was very eager and enthusiastic. And finally, luckily, a man named Paul Torres, who worked at the Henry Wine Group, a great, great fine wine distributor in California, took a chance on me and said, okay, kid, we're going to give you this opportunity. We're going to give you every account that nobody else wants in the city of San Francisco. I think I had like 400 retail and restaurant accounts that I was going to be selling my portfolio of fine wine to, and it was pretty awful. I think it was something that nobody else would have taken, and it was 100% commission. So I was learning on my toes every day. I remember people were handing me books, because obviously I think they felt sorry for me, how little I knew. So they were handing me books like The Oxford Companion to Wine, really thick, heavy, amazing resources, but they were so intimidating to me. And I used them. I would drive around in my car selling my wine every day, and you know, inevitably people would ask me questions all day long that I didn't know the answer to. And this was pre-smartphone days, so I would say, I don't know, but I'll find out for next time. And I would go back to my car and I would study, and I was studying all the time. But I wish that I had this book that I wrote, Hello Wine. This is the book that I wish that someone had given me back then, because it really does unlock all of these mysteries of wine in very simple, easy to understand language. And that's really what I found as I continued in wine and as I stumbled about for a few years. It was a painful education. And I think that although I was never thinking about writing a book way back then, I definitely was forming my philosophy about wine and about the idea that I thought wine snobs were completely useless. I couldn't understand why, if our common goal as wine distributors, as people who are out there pushing wine, if we were being, you know, snotty or intimidating or, you know, keeping all these wine mysteries going, how that benefited us at all. We should be out there spreading wine truths and getting people to drink more wine and making people more comfortable with it. And so the attitude that I was met with on a daily basis was really frustrating to me. And so I think I've put all that into this book. And as I continued on, and as soon as I started to know something about wine, I made this vow that I knew that I was good at communicating about wine, and I really loved doing it. I started training people in restaurants and retail, the people that I was selling to. As soon as I knew something, I started helping other people understand, and I loved that. I think I was circling back to being a teacher in a way. And so that's what this book is about. It's about the book that I wish that I had. It's simple. It's easy to use. But it doesn't dumb wine down. I didn't want something that oversimplified it, because wine is intriguing and there's so much to know. So I think I set people up for that a lot in the first couple of chapters is, you know, get ready for this ride because it's really cool.
Melanie Wagner, the author of Hello Wine, The Most Essential Things You Need to Know About Wine, available now where books are sold. And I wanted to say, Melanie, this is very much a gateway book, and it seems you have a lot of competition because through the centuries, there have been lots of stuff written about wine and how to enjoy wine. What do you think sets your book apart from those?
Well, I think I have a different voice about it. I think maybe it's because of my background and that I didn't come at this from a, from a wine drinking family, that my voice, I think, is, I mean, I'm fairly young still, and I'm a girl, a woman. And this is typically, I mean, wine is typically a male dominated business still. It's starting to change, but I think that makes it a little different. And my approach is very warm, and that's how I am to my students. And when I sat down to write the book, I first listed all of the questions that I have heard over and over and over again from my students, from consumers and from wine professionals that I've trained. And a lot of them are not the, you know, what's in the soil composition of people don't really need to get that technical to really love wine. In fact, I say in the book, getting too technical can suck the romance right out of your glass for sure.
Indeed.
So I think a lot of what I answer for people, what I talk about for people, is how to insert wine very gracefully into your life, how to feel confident with wine. I mean, I'm kind of like a wine coach, I would say. I want people to feel really smart, but also empowered when they finish the book.
You say you compiled all these questions. What was the number one question that people ask, or what do you feel was the biggest obstacle people have when it comes to dealing with wine?
I think the biggest obstacle is that people feel awkward with it. They feel intimidated. They feel like somebody's going to laugh at them, that they said the wrong thing, or that they don't know as much as they do. I can't tell you, Mark, almost everybody that I meet, when they hear that I'm a wine teacher or a wine writer, the first thing they say to me is, oh, I love wine, but, you know, I'm not a connoisseur, or I don't know that much about it. And it really frustrates me. I can't think of anything else in the world that people first, you know, when they know they're so passionate about something, and then they apologize for how little they know. I mean, food's not like that. People feel completely comfortable saying, I love Italian food, without feeling like they have to know everything about it. So I think that's the biggest obstacle. I think making people feel welcome and comfortable and cozy with wine is the first step that you need to do. So I do a lot of that in the book. I talk about, you know, wine is for everybody. We're the only country, we consume here in the United States, we consume most of the expensive wine. Now China's kind of competing with that a little bit, but we consume the very expensive wine. We think of Europeans as, you know, being really sophisticated when it comes to wine, but really they're not. I mean, they drink wine every day, the Italians, you know, lunch and dinner, but they don't drink expensive wines. They drink very humble, you know, inexpensive, sometimes really cheap wine that they, you know, go down to the grocery store basically and fill up a cask that they drink out of for the week, or they're making their own wine. So we treat wine like it's a lot fancier than they do in other regions, where it's just an essential part of the table.
You do a fantastic job of covering all the different aspects. You mentioned about whether the soil was good or not. You talk about growing grapes and how you go from grape to glass. That's one of your chapters. And you talk about grapes to know, teaching people about Sauvignon Blanc and Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, etc. And great advice all the way through, including the wine and food, which is something I know a lot of people are always concerned with, is, you know, eat this, drink that, what do I do with this? And
yeah,
you have the perfect guide here in Hello Wine to do that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I love to eat. And we do a lot of eating around here. And I think most people who come into wine, because most people in this country aren't brought up, you know, knowing a lot about wine. And I think that most people find their way to wine through food. They're food lovers first. So it was very important for me to talk about food and the relationship between food and wine, and how wine can elevate the eating experience.
And great, too, that you have Wine 911, what to do with a bottle of wine. And I wish I had this on a number of occasions. When something goes wrong, was that something you found important to put in here too? Because a lot of people are concerned.
That's part of the feeling confident. So if you have looked at wine 911 and you know what to do if you have an emergency, like you ran out or you don't have a corkscrew or the bottle smells funky in some way, then you're going to be able to help other people and teach them. And
what to do when the cork breaks. I found that very interesting. I know what I try to do, but I usually screw it up. And temperature issues, great advice here. What do you, in reaction to Hello Wine, what have you heard the most from readers who have looked at the most essential things about wine?
It's people have really responded really well. It's been pretty amazing, like the reviews on Amazon that I've seen and just friends of mine who have given it as gifts and the response that they've gotten back. But people have said aha a lot, like, oh, I always wondered about that. Aha, I get it. Like, that makes perfect sense now that you've said it in that way. And some people have said, I'm really absorbed in this. I can sit down with a glass of wine and I can read most of it in a night if you have a couple of hours. And then other people have said, I know this is something that I'm going to go back to again and again because I did want it to be, as you can tell, I mean, it's got a warm and friendly feel. It's small enough to fit inside a large purse, I would say. But it's a reference book, too. It's something that you can definitely go back to and reference over and over again, especially the food and wine sections, I think.
I was inspired by Hello Wine to ask you for a lesson here, Coach. We have a few minutes left here, and I know a lot of people who don't know a lot about wine will sometimes get a bottle from a friend in a gift basket, or someone will bring a bottle of wine to dinner, or the like. I here have a bottle of wine someone gave me, a glass and a corkscrew. I'm mm-hmm. fully outfitted, but tell me, if I don't know anything about wine, how do I approach this bottle? I mean, what am I looking at when I look at the label? What should I look for? How should I open it? Give me a quick lesson in approaching this bottle here.
Well, you first might want to know what the wine is, so you should read the label and see where it's from. It should say the country of origin somewhere on there. So can you read the label for us?
Yes, this is an Edna Valley Vineyard 2010 Merlot from Paso Robles, San Luis Obispo County, so a California wine.
Yep, a California wine, and Edna Valley is a really nice value-priced winery. And the year, I mean, the year can tell you, if somebody is giving you a really old bottle of wine, that could be kind of a rare treasure. You don't see a lot of old bottles of wine that are on the shelves in wine stores, so maybe it's something that they've brought up from their cellar that they've been hanging on to for a while. But you've got a young, fresh wine, and all right. So do you want to open it up?
Sure. And what's the best way? It's got foil on the top and doesn't have. I've seen some with pull tabs on champagne bottles. What should I do here?
I like to cut the foil, and typically you cut the foil just under the second lip of the glass bottle, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
And you don't have to do any of this if you have a screw cap. I talk a lot about screw caps in my book. I'm a huge fan of screw caps. And they will make sure that your wine is not infected with a chemical compound called TCA, which makes your wine smell like musty, wet cardboard.
And that comes from a cork?
That comes from a cork, yeah. It gets in the cork and then it gets in the wine. But you can't always tell that a wine is corked or has this TCA flaw just by smelling the cork. You really have to smell the wine. But if you smell musty, wet cardboard, your wine has a flaw and it's been what's called corked.
Okay, well, I'm facing a cork now here.
Check, we'll see. Okay, so once your cork is, tell me when your cork is out.
You should have been working while you were sharing the lesson there.
Okay, so you're cutting the foil off, and then you're peeling the foil back. And then you are, what kind of corkscrew do you have?
Waiter's corkscrew, I know from reading Hello Wine.
That's my favorite kind. I think it's the most simple to use once you get used to it.
And there goes the cork.
Oh, nice pop.
Out of. Okay, so I'm looking at the cork on the corkscrew and an open bottle of wine.
Open bottle of wine, so you don't need to do anything with the cork. If you feel the cork and it's more, it should be moist, and that just tells you that the wine's been stored properly on its side. Because if a cork is too dry, it will shrink and then oxygen can get in and ruin the wine. But typically, I just don't even touch the cork. I just set okay. it over to the side.
So no sniffing the cork. You don't necessarily recognize sniffing the cork, but sniffing the wine.
I have pulled disgusting looking black and green corks out of really old bottles of wine that have turned out to be amazing and flawless, and vice versa.
So don't judge a wine by its cork, just like a book by its cover, right?
No, you gotta put your nose in the glass. So pour a little wine in your glass, and I would just pour maybe a third of the way. You don't want anything too full because you want to be able to swirl your glass around.
All right, third of a glass of wine here.
That swirling was one of the things that one of the experiences I remember so vividly from when I first got into wine. I was visiting a winery in Napa that was pretty hoity-toity, I won't mention the name, and everybody was swirling their wine around in their glass, and I was a curious young woman, and I walked up and I asked the woman who worked there why the swirling was going on, what that did, and she said, they're volatizing the esters. And then she turned on her heels and she walked away. And I was like, oh, that's so rude, because I have no idea what that means. And, of course, later I learned that technically she was correct. That is the technical term for getting oxygen mixed in with the wine, which opens it up. I like to think about it as making the aromas and flavors of the wine more extroverted, because they can be a little introverted when they've been contained in the bottle for a while. So you want to get oxygen in there to open up the wine. It's the same thing you're doing when you put a little wine in your mouth and you kind of swish it around and roll it over your tongue and your teeth, is you're also aerating the wine inside your mouth.
Well, my esters are volatilized here, I believe, so...
Stick your nose in. You want to make sure that wine should always smell like fruit, first and foremost, before you smell anything else. If it smells like mouse poop, if it smells like, you know, too much like a barnyard, if it smells like funky, wet basement smell, anything that is not appealing, the wine probably has a flaw. So trust your instinct on that. And if you smell a bad wine and you're at a restaurant, and I go through in Hello Wine, I go through the main things that go bad with a bottle of wine, what it smells like, what it is, and what to do about it. But for the most part, if you smell a wine that doesn't smell like fruit, you should, if you're at a restaurant, you should tell the waiter or waitress and just ask for another bottle. And they should not give you any sort of attitude about that. And if you buy it from a wine shop, you should take it back. You should just stick the cork back in it and take it back, and they will refund you. And it's not that the restaurant and the retail that you bought it from, they're not actually paying the tab on that. The winery is. So don't worry about making them upset.
Well, very fruity smell, very nice in this 2010 Merlot. So now take a sip and do the same across my tongue, I presume?
Yes. Yeah, so Merlot is a grape that has gotten a bad rap, because a lot of Merlots, wine can sometimes be like fashion, in that people get an idea of something that they think is cool, you know, whether it's Chardonnay or Merlot or Riesling, and then all of a sudden you have farmers who, not all farmers, but some farmers who are sort of rushing to churn out a lot of typically inexpensive versions of that grape to meet the demand. But wine is really hard to do that with, because if you said you wanted to go to Napa and start a winery tomorrow, it would take you 3 or 4 years before, 5 years sometimes, before you started producing any fruit that was worthy of putting into wine. So it's pretty hard to follow trends where wine is concerned. But Merlot got a bad rap because in the 1980s, everybody decided that they liked drinking Merlot. And so there was a mad rush to plant Merlot vineyards all across, especially the state of California. And you ended up with a lot of not so great Merlot. But Merlot can be really good. In fact, some of the most coveted wines in the world are made with a very high percentage of Merlot. So if you've ever seen the movie Sideways, great movie with Paul Giamatti that came out, I think, in the early 2000s. And it tells about this man who's kind of a, I mean, he's not in the business, but he's definitely a wine snob. And he goes with his friends to Santa Barbara County. And at one point he says, I'm not drinking any expletive Merlot, because he has this thing about, he thinks Merlot is, all Merlot is bad. But then at the end of the movie, he is seen in a diner out of a styrofoam cup drinking this coveted bottle that he's been saving forever of 1961 Cheval Blanc, which a lot of people don't know, but it's mostly Merlot. So,
an inside joke there.
Not all Merlot is bad. It typically is easy to drink. It's got a velvety texture. It's plummy tasting with black fruit. So you can tell me what you taste in the wine, but...
Oh, no, that it is, and very tasty, and I know Hello Wine has a whole vocabulary that would help me properly convey and communicate what I taste, but I will just say, tastes good. And I think that's the other thing when it comes to approaching wine, and you kind of make that clear, that you know, if it's something that suits your palate, then go for it.
Yes, nobody is the boss of your tongue except for yourself, so if you like it, that's great, and if you like inexpensive wine, you should be really happy about that, but because typically what happens is the more and more you fall in love with wine, the more expensive your taste gets, inevitably.
You didn't warn us about that in Hello Wine, though.
Oh, I think I did.
Yes, you did. Well, thank you, Melanie, for your time and all the super information in your new book.
Oh, thank you so much. Cheers.
Melanie Wagner, author of Hello Wine, The Most Essential Things You Need to Know About Wine, available where books are sold. You can learn more about Melanie and her work and the book at wvxu.org. And as Melanie said, cheers.